Welcome to Epochs number 21, hosted by me, Beau Dade, and I'm joined by Josh Firm.
Hello.
How are you, Josh?
I'm very well.
Good.
Looking forward to this. This is a prominent figure from where I'm from, so it's good to be talking about something close to home. How are you doing anyway?
Yeah, fine, yeah. So Francis Drake is a bit of a hero of mine, you know, ranks up there with, what, like the Duke of Wellington, you know, that sort of thing, sort of a national hero. Obviously dating from the 16th century, so quite old, but I'm sort of been familiar with his life and career and exploits since I was a small child, so I've gone over and over and over it many times, so happy to do it again. And I understand you're sort of aware of the big points, but maybe not all the minutiae of, what he did.
Being a fellow Plymouthian, we got taught a lot about him in school, so I imagine is very dependent on the quality of the education I received, which probably not the best, but
right, okay,
we'll see. I obviously know bits and pieces. I know lots of the local area where he grew up, but other than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great story. It's filled with daring do and bloody adventure and lots of tension. There's a lot to go through. I mean, one of the first things I wanted to say, sort of just an overview, is that Drake was involved in sort of three, four, depending on how you want to count it, maybe five different incredible different things in his life. You know, like most people that go down in history for one reason or another is for one thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, I don't know, Gordon Brown. he'll be in the history books for one thing, being Prime Minister once, and that's it. You know,
selling the gold at a really bad rate.
Oh, yeah.
That too.
And having a weird mouth jaw tick thing. Do you remember that? We used to go... Remember that?
Vaguely, anyway, yeah.
That's his most famous thing. That you know, some people occasionally might go down for a couple of things, like Eisenhower, you know, being the supreme head of the army in World War II and president later in the 50s. You know, you could sort of say there's two things, two completely separate things. Whereas Drake, it's sort of, it's three or four, maybe five different things, completely separate episodes in his life, each of which is fantastic, unbelievable almost. Sometimes people they're born at the right time for events to pan out. And if you're lucky, you don't die, then you can be involved in multiple things. So anyway, Drake is one of those. It's sort of quite a fantastic life, filled really with interesting events. So, well, maybe we can just kick it off. You mentioned there that he's famously from Plymouth, a Devon boy.
Well, it's Tavistock.
Tavistock.
Technically speaking, but Tavistock is, I don't know, about an hour's drive in modern times away from Plymouth. So it's about half a day's horse ride, I would imagine. So it's not very far away. It's the nearest town, but it's obviously the major port, and him being a naval man, he was more associated with Plymouth than his place of birth in Tavistock, which is still only small. I think it's only got about 14,000 people living there today. Been there many times. Very nice. Very quaint.
I've never been there. I've been to Plymouth, not been to Tavistock though, but I've heard it's quaint, very nice.
I can only say good things.
Drake is sort of synonymous with Plymouth in many ways. Mm-hmm. I think if people know sort of any detail about Drake's life, they will equate him with Plymouth. But the fact of the matter is, he spent nearly all his childhood, all his formative years, he learnt his trade in sailing and the Navy on the River Medway, which is in Essex. There's...
You're laying claim to him then.
That's... Yeah.
But what about all the statues in Plymouth, eh?
Well, the thing is, the Royal Navy, so let's put him in some historical context. He was born during the age of Edward, Henry VIII's son, who famously didn't live very long, died in his minority still. Drake was actually, his sort of formative years when he was a small child, first sort of becoming conscious of the world, would have been during the reign of Bloody Mary. It's the whole story of that is bound up with Catholics versus Protestants, isn't it? There's wars of religion going on in Europe at the time. Lots and lots of wars between Christians, between those loyal to the Roman See and those that more favour Luther and Calvin and the Protestant forms of Christianity. And it was really quite bitter. Both sides thinking the others are sort of evil heretics, you know, so it's really quite bitter. But it didn't really spill out in as badly as it might have done in England, because Bloody Mary died of sort of natural causes, and her little sister Elizabeth took over, who was a Protestant, but sort of kind of famous. One of the things she's known for is that she was quite relaxed when it came to religion. People were allowed to sort of do whatever their own conscience dictated, to a degree. I mean, the people were still executed and imprisoned. I mean, I've put quite a rosy tint on that. It was still quite dangerous to be a Catholic at certain points in England, depending on what you did. You know, if you tried to spread Catholicism at certain points, you would be in trouble. But mainly, you were sort of, it was quite relaxed. But in the age of Mary, when Drake was a small boy, there was a thing called Wyatt's Rebellion, because Mary gets married to Philip and of Spain, and people were extremely worried that Britain would just become a Catholic country again.
Because, of course, Spain is Catholic, yeah, isn't it? And yeah, our traditional enemy, really.
It would just become, and England, Britain, would just become one more of Spain's holdings. And it's not that paranoid or crazy to think
Of course not, no. I mean, Spain was relatively powerful at the time. Probably
The most powerful country in the world, yeah. Easily, yeah, yeah. Philip II of Spain was the most powerful man in the world, kind of easily, I would say. And he's an interesting character. He's, you know, he's not like a completely insane, you know, like Inquisition type, but he is staunchly Catholic though, you know, and staunchly committed to expanding Spain's empire wherever possible.
And is that why you reckon he got married to, Mary? Was it Mary? Or
yeah,
was it Elizabeth?
Yeah. Yeah. No, Mary. Yeah. So, well, a big part of this, there was lots of wars going on in the Netherlands, Spanish controlled Netherlands, at that time, and Britain kept bankrolling and helping out the Protestants in the Netherlands. And so it was quite clear from Spain's point of view that it would be better to have England on side rather than an enemy. So one way of doing that is to sort of marry into the royal line, marry into the Tudors. But when Mary dies childless, Elizabeth is sort of the young Queen Elizabeth I is known as a Protestant. There's just no real question that she would marry Philip. I don't think he wanted to marry her even. And anyway, it all comes to a head with the Spanish Armada. But that's much later. That's when Drake is a full-grown man. But that's one of the last great episodes, or probably the last great event that he was involved in. And that's 1588. So that's towards the end of his life. But going back to the beginning, there was Wyatt's Rebellion, which was a bunch of English noblemen, quite a lot of them Catholic, tried to rebel against the crown because they weren't happy with this royal match. So it's not just a case of Protestants just simply rising up in as a reaction to Philip and Spain. There's lots of Catholics, even British English Catholics, were suspicious and worried about it.
So what was their motivation then? Because I can understand why the Protestants might be wary, but I can't necessarily see why a Catholic would be wary of more Catholic influence in Britain, right?
Well, there's two layers of religion and nationality. So even though Philip might be a Catholic, he's still a foreigner, he's still a Spaniard.
So you know, it runs deeper then.
Yeah.
Anti-Spanish sentiment is more important than God to Britain, apparently.
We could argue that in the case of Wyatt's Rebellion. Yeah, absolutely. But in the end, it was put down. I mean, it was put down quite easily. But it did revolve around the sort of the southeast of England, where the Medway is. And Drake's father was a lay preacher, a Protestant lay preacher in the southeast of England. So it's a bad time to be that in the age of Bloody Mary, where she was burning people alive for being heretics. And Drake was the eldest of 12. He had 11 siblings.
That's crazy.
Crazy, yeah.
Just the family sizes in the past. I don't know. It's difficult to get your head around, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, no such thing as contraception or anything. But, well, I mean, and anyway, his mum died when he was still young, still a boy. Maybe just of exhaustion. I mean, 12 kids in quick succession. Yeah. I mean, there's no mean feat. And his father was sort of this penniless lay preacher that would go around and scrape together a few pennies for leading people in prayer. in English, you know, to a real proper Catholic in the 16th century, that's an evil thing to do. You know, so anyway, his father had to be extremely careful, and they were really quite penniless. I think at some point, I think there's accounts that they lived on a tethered up hulk, you know, like an old ship that's permanently tethered, and that there's like a prison hulks. Have you ever heard of those, where they would have a big old ship tethered out to sea and it'd be used as like a prison ship?
I think they did that in Plymouth with Napoleon.
Oh, right. Was he held on one at one point?
Yeah. Okay. He was held in Plymouth Sound. And I remember, this is just a tidbit of information, he described the breakwater, which had just been constructed around that sort of time, as one of the greatest achievements of man.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Funny.
Which, coming from Napoleon, I imagine that's quite a compliment.
Yeah. No,
just
absolutely.
Throw away a bit of history for you.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Also, this is another tangent, but when he was being held out in this prison boat, loads of people, because he was so famous, would take boats out to see him out on deck, kind of patrolling around on the top deck, and supposedly so much so that one woman drowned just trying to get a glimpse of him. So there we go.
I can believe that. I would probably if I lived there at that time. If I could catch a glimpse of old Boney, I think I probably would try. there's a long running theme in the Sharp novels about if you know Napoleon's on the field, that every man sort of straining his neck to see if they can see him, just to catch a glimpse of the little Corsican. Anyway, that's hundreds of years after this. That's an aside. but yeah, I think Drake and his family lived on a hulk for a while, which is, you know, it speaks of penury, really. Mm-hmm. It speaks of being extremely poor. And so as soon as he's old enough, really, his dad needs to sort of get rid of him in one way or another, needs him to sort of find a trade or to start making money of his own, or start pulling his weight. So when he was quite young, very young, you know, as far as we're concerned, sort of 11, 12 years old, something like that, he joins the crew of a merchantman, of a merchant ship, a small merchant ship.
This was his, I think they were extended family or something in Plymouth, is that right? Something like that.
Okay, yeah, so straight away there's a connection between the Drake family, mm-hmm, and the Hawkins.
That's the one, yeah.
So the Hawkins family come into it, and they're sort of quite well-to-do. Mm-hmm. They're at the very least middle class, you know, at the very least, if not higher than that. Maybe some sort of local minor gentry even.
I know they've got a street named after them in Plymouth somewhere.
Right. Well, there's a small story actually where Drake's dad, because Drake's story gets mixed up with that of John Hawkins. Mm-hmm. So John Hawkins. But the generation before Drake was ever born, another John Hawkins, not the famous John Hawkins, but maybe his dad or his uncle or something, another one of the Hawkins, was involved in highway robbery with Drake's dad. They literally stopped someone on the highway and robbed their purse.
So he went from a highway robber to a preacher,
mm,
and that was his father, mm, and he lived on a boat.
Mm.
It's quite the picture of the family life that he had.
Yeah, yeah. And so that Hawkins and Drake's dad were sort of arraigned, or they were sort of asked to answer for themselves, but they fled. Well, in fact, that was probably why Drake's father originally fled Devon, mm-hmm, or the Plymouth Tavistock region, was to escape these charges.
Because, of course, being a highwayman in that area as well, it's pretty easy to get away. Even to this day, it's pretty wild out there. So you've got lots of avenues for escape.
Apparently the local lord did eventually pardon him, but he'd already left for the southeast of England. So he raised his many children on the Medway, River Medway. Mm-hmm. Now, places like Portsmouth and Plymouth are sort of famed for being sort of the great ports of the Royal Navy. But back then, the Royal Navy was tiny. I mean, I wouldn't say non-existent. It certainly existed, but it was tiny. I mean, tiny. The Crown had a handful of ships, warships, just not very many at all. And anyway, a lot of them were tethered up on the Medway. And because there's sort of, it's good for the sort of some, when the tide goes out, there's some nice mud flats there where the ships will beach and you can then scrape the the barnacles off and re-cork them and things. The Medway's good for that. You know, Portsmouth Sound isn't good for that particular thing. So anyway, at this time, Medway, the young Drake, would have seen lots and lots of shipping and the Royal Navy, as was. He would have seen that his whole boyhood on the Medway. So sort of no wonder it sort of fired his imagination, or there was no real question whether he will get involved in sort of seafaring. So anyway, when he's sort of a young teenager, a boy really, he sort of learns his trade for a few years on this merchantman, sort of a small ship, I think sort of a double mast ship with a crew of 20 or 30, so quite small, just mm-hmm. going across the channel, maybe occasionally down to sort of the Bay of Biscay, you know, nothing too extensive. But learning how to control a ship, you know, learning how to sail, learning how to tack into the wind, learning how to control men a little bit on ship, you know, learning the norms of what it's like to be on board. And navigation, seems that he had some sort of knack for navigation, reading maps and things. And so by the time he's about, well, not that old, sort of 17 or 18 years old or so, the captain of that small ship, who seems to have thought of Drake as a surrogate son on some level, because he died and left the ship to Drake, which is kind of incredible, really. Mm. I mean, so Drake's still young, it's like 18 years old or something like that. And suddenly he finds himself the owner. He went from a penniless boy, quite literally penniless, to owning this ship. I mean, it's not a big ship.
Wasn't it on an expedition? Correct me if I'm wrong here, I might just be misremembering, but wasn't it wasn't he associated with the Hawkins family for quite a while, and these expeditions were to do with them, and it was someone in their employ that left him the ship, so that I suppose that would give him a bit more of a senior position, at least if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay, I mean, I'm not entirely sure about that. So the Drake family and the Hawkins family are definitely connected by mm-hmm. relations since way back.
Sure.
So that's always there. And mm-hmm. he definitely goes on soon after this to get involved in expeditions of the Hawkins family directly. But as for whether this original guy who bequeathed Drake that ship, mm-hmm. whether he was connected to the Hawkins, I'm not sure. I actually don't know that.
Okay.
It's one of those things, you know, I know we're recording this for content. I don't want to just say yes. I'm not sure.
With these sorts of things, especially when he wasn't a notable figure, it's not really going to be written down. It's not like today where you've got a ship's logbook and it just tells you all of the previous owners and all of this sort of stuff. That's a modern thing. It didn't really happen then. You could pass around a ship and the crown would have no idea about it. As far as they were concerned.
Actually, maybe it's worth taking just a couple of minutes to talk about the historiography of Drake very, very quickly.
Sure.
Just super quickly. Might be a good moment to. In some ways, there's a fair amount of detail. In other ways, not. So there's a fair amount of people still got their letters and things that they sent to each other. People that were on part of his crew and things wrote about it during his lifetime. And there's chroniclers. Drake becomes extremely famous in his own lifetime, and so people wrote about it at the time. So there's, in some ways, there's plenty of information. But then in other ways, there's sort of a dearth of information. So, for example, sort of, you know, parish records aren't completely complete, so we don't know, you know, exactly what year some people were born, and, you know, we don't have the manifests or the logs mm-hmm. of every ship he was ever on, including these early ones. So we don't know all detail. And then also, Drake becomes something of, his story in later life becomes mixed up with sort of state secrets. And so some of his later voyages become sort of politically sensitive, exactly what he did and didn't see, exactly where or where he didn't go. And so a lot of it becomes quite literally that, a state secret. So it was one of his most important voyages. When he got back to England, all his records were taken by Queen Elizabeth's spy masters and kept under lock and key in the Tower of London and have never been seen to this day. They were spirited away and disappeared, and they're lost to history to this day. So
I think that's
just an example.
There's a series of video games, actually, called the Uncharted games, which base predicates their entire thing, their entire story, on the idea that Drake's missions that were Uncharted were kept under lock and key, and there's lots of scope for mystery there, and being kind of, I don't know, what's having a poetic license with some of the history of it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as a confirmed and committed history nerd, I would love it if one day there's news that in some archive somewhere in the British Library, or maybe there's an archive in the Tower of London itself, or the House of Lords Library, or something or other, the Bodleian Library, something, that Drake's paperwork turns up. That would be incredible. It might happen as well. Mm. Maybe one day. I mean, who knows? It seems unlikely now. But maybe, I mean...
My biggest worry would be that it would kind of emerge and then it would be really mundane. Like, right, yeah, that's... 50 days at sea, yeah. You know, still water. Great.
Well, it will emerge, we didn't find the Northwest Passage. That's it. That's the headline. We didn't find what we're looking for.
We know he definitely didn't find that. Yeah, right. Yeah. The Franklin Expedition, things like that, much later.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit there. Already spent a bit of time here. Maybe we go through it a tiny bit quicker. So, yeah, once he's bequeathed this relatively small sloop, I don't know if it's what exactly type of ship
it was. It's just a small boat, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's perfectly good for channel hopping and for going up and down coastlines, but it's not sort of... Well, you can't cross the Atlantic in it or anything like that.
Yeah, you could probably cross the channel, but not, as you said, the Atlantic.
So, Drake... just sells that boat straight away. He doesn't decide to sort of become the captain of it and start trying to make a living in sort of, cross-channel commerce or anything. He just sells it. And a lot of the hands, a lot of the crew on that boat sort of follow him now. They're sort of his. And so he decides that he's going to take that money and the small number of men that are in his train, and he's going to go back to Plymouth. He's going to go back and... try and make a name for himself there and try and get a commission or try and get another boat or just try and continue his sort of fledgling career there. And so when he gets there, it's the Hawkins family are, as I say, are still and have been for a long time sort of an important family. And because they're sort of connected by blood on some level, it sort of kind of makes sense that he gets in touch with Sir John Hawkins, now it's the famous Sir John Hawkins, of which you can find portraits painted of him, and says to him, you know, like, can you give me a job, basically, is there anything I can do for you? And it seems that it's one of those points when you look back as a historian, when you have to sort of read between the lines or read or sort of try and understand what can only be inferred by what we don't know for sure. But what you can say is that Drake must have had a personality about him. You know, he couldn't have been a shrinking violet. He couldn't have been sort of a wishy-washy, nothing type character. He must have had a force of will on some level to have. He's only 18, 19 years old, and yet men, seasoned sea dogs, prepared to follow him. And John Hawkins is prepared to say, yes, I'll give you a role, and quite a senior one, on one of his expeditions.
Well, I suppose it's a pretty good... CV, so to speak, to turn up with a bunch of money and men to start your own expedition when you're at such a young age. It must be an indicator that you've got potential there as well, just purely based on the circumstances in which you turned up.
Well, definitely, it says that you're not a complete loser, doesn't it? It says that you're on some level you're capable of some things. You know, some people just seem to be kind of inept at whatever they try. They're sort of inept at it, you know. And it seems that Drake wasn't there. He sort of switched on, maybe is another way of putting it. You know, he's looking at the world with his eyes open. And he's no fool.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.